following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 4 of the Pulse Gamecast. I am your host, Gradol.
And I'm Jason.
Joining me, as always, today's record date is November 26th. It's 8 p.m. Eastern. I guess let's just jump right into it. As usual, we start every show telling you what we've been playing, what we've been doing. I'll start off this week. I finished the storyline for Batman Arkham Origins. It was great, it was fun, it was awesome, I love it. According to Raptor, I'm at 40%, only 40% finished with the game. If you've ever played a Batman Arkham game, then you know that there are just tons of Riddler trophies to have to collect, and I still have to go through the entire game and collect those. That's still something I have to do. I've also been playing SWTOR with Jason in our various... I think mainly we kind of stuck to Imperial this week, but yes, I drank the Kool-Aid, and yeah, let's cue up all the groans. I resubbed to WoW. I'm back in WoW. I stopped playing WoW a couple years ago, and I'm definitely not a hardcore addicted gamer, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it, kind of prepping for Warlords of Draenor. That's going to drop, I'm assuming, within the next few months. And I've actually started playing with Blacklace here at Holosuite Media, formerly of Beyond the Veil and currently of A Worthy Opponent. I'm in her guild, her and her husband, Autumn Bane. And that's what I've been up to. How about you, Jason?
I'm doing a lot of the same. Been doing a lot in SWTOR, obviously. I have way too many characters. I think we've established my alt-itis. But that being said, I'm trying to currently figure out ways to funnel money past the gatekeeper, the black knight of my finances, my wife, and figure out how to get more money into my account so I can buy adaptive gear. Short of that, I've been I actually hooked up with the Humble Bundle again. That's going to be the death of me eventually. This week's Humble Bundle, I believe, was the Pinball FX2 series. And they released the Pinball FX 2 with 3 Star Wars tabletops if you paid more than $6 or more. And it also has some Marvel tabletops and some of the original, you know, Epic Quest and things like that. But the Boba Fett tabletop, I just had to have it. And it plays on low-end graphics cards. So my son saw me whip out the old the Xbox controller that connects via USB. And eventually I had to have spend another $6 for him. So... But it's been going pretty good. Other than just doing some pinball tabletop gaming on my computer and SWTOR with you, that's been pretty much it.
Good deal. Moving on to the news. Last week, the 19th of November, EVE Online, and this is a Pulse Gamecast first, I believe. We're actually talking about EVE. They had an expansion come out called Rubicon, November 19th. You can, of course, head to eveonline.com/Rubicon to check that out for yourselves. I guess one of the big interesting points of it is that you, as a pilot, will now be able to build structures that you can take with you into space. 4 of these structures are the Depot, which is a temporary mining storage. Now, I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, other than the fact that you mine and stash it right there with you. I don't know if you're able to then, I'm assuming, pick that depot up in your hold and fly it back to wherever you have it processed or whatever. I'm assuming that you don't have to have, what are they called, Jason? Like a hauler, a cargo shipper?
Yeah, the hauler series, that is correct.
The hauler. I'm assuming you wouldn't have to have a hauler come and pick that depot up. That's what I would assume. Second new structure device that you as a pilot will be able to craft is a tractor unit. This is something you will drop, and I guess this is really valuable for the military career pilots. This just begins tractoring in capsules. What are they called when you kill someone?
Yeah, exactly. The crates that you drop. The capsules. Yeah.
Okay, so this I guess is like an auto loot, essentially. Also there is a siphon. What this does is you will drop this near an enemy or rival corporation's POS, player operated or player owned structure, and it will siphon their stored material. So drop this near their depot, you start sucking out their minerals. We were talking about this before the show. I guess you mine crystals, anything that you might store.
Yeah.
You're essentially robbing them of it. And the last player-owned structure is and I had to ask Jason how to pronounce this, cynosural inhibitor. Again, as a player-operated structure, player-owned structure, you will drop this. And Jason, you said 100 kilometers or 100,000 kilometers?
Yeah, it was 100 kilometers, yeah. Well, it was 100,000, yes.
100K. Okay. And so for 100,000 kilometers, this will prohibit cynos from taking effect, with the exception of Black Ops, and then, as Jason told me, any ship with stealth. It will prohibit those from happening. Also, I guess in that line of thought, they are releasing a new ship devoted to Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah, faction.
Okay, a faction. That's a faction ship. So essentially, I guess that's going to be kind of a rescue healer type ship, and from what they were saying, it's going to be stealthy, I guess. So if you're out there dropping your inhibitors, well, the sisters, I suppose, are going to sneak past you.
Yeah, I'm noticing they're doing a lot more with those Black Ops now. So if you can have the siphon, I'm under the impression now that a cyno-insulated or a Black Ops-insulated ship can now get in, get close to a POS, drop the siphon. So we're going to see a lot more in stealth operations happening, which is good because that's one more layer of depth EVE is going to have.
Now, I've played so very little EVE. I really have. Are there a lot of ships that are capable of stealth, or is this a fairly new addition to the game?
I was up 2 releases ago, I believe. I was one of the lucky few who actually filled out the request form that they send out and tell us what you think of our game, right?
Uh-huh.
And I filled it out, and believe it or not, I won a full year of playing the game by actually filling that out. My character's name was Thomas Pitt, and I won. It was one of 4 people for the entire game, and it's just random, completely random. And I can't tell you how many people were giving me hate mail and stuff, you know, but I won a full year playing the game. So I played in depth for quite a while, absolutely free, and had a wonderful time. But yes, we developed a corp, and our entire corp, I think it was called the East Side Vulcans or something like that. It's been a while. But the point was, we did transport, and we actually did stealth transport. We got a ship called the Viator, V-I-A-T-O-R. And it was a blockade runner, and then there was another one that was a stealth runner. And all we would do is transport people's stuff by bonding through LOSEC. So if you needed to get from point A to point B quickly, or you needed to just get to point A, point B, and don't want to mess with it, you could bond us out. We would transport all of your stuff. If we lost it, then we had to pay up on the bond. But if we didn't, we moved it from point A to point B, and you paid us. And that's effectively how it worked. That's how stealth worked back then. In the transport business. Now, in the military business, obviously it's scout and working behind enemy lines, but now that there's structures in place, what you're looking at is at a huge jump in just the stealth technology and the whole stealth. You know how you can, in this particular game, you gain levels by, you don't even have to be logged in, your character's gaining levels while you're logged out.
Right.
You're probably going to see a lot of people buying more and more of those skills, going up that skill tree, trying to get those stealth skills up now.
Our next little tidbit of news is one I found. EQ Next, EverQuest Next, in the British PC Gamer December issue. I suppose they're going to do a little write-up on it, but they've announced 4 of the classes. These are classes that are pretty standard to EverQuest 2 and or EQ 1. They are the Cleric, the Necromancer, the Beast Lord, and the Tempest. Now, the Tempest was definitely EQ2. That wasn't in the first one. On the website, they've just kind of said, hey, here's the Cleric who's going to do either two-handed hammer or a mason shield, and the Necro will have a pet. that grows as you level, things like that. So I guess unfortunately they're keeping a wrap on it, and you will have to pick up the December UK edition of PC Gamer to get more on that. However, I'm sure after December, EverQuest Next or EverQuest or EQ Nexus, which is a fan site about EQ Next, we'll have all the details. And four classes, you know, oh wow, four class. Well, remember, there's going to be 40 total classes in EQ Next. So I guess they're just dropping out the little tidbits, the little breadcrumbs to keep us following.
Beast Lord, though, I mean, come on, you know, they had to add that in after they were pressured by the fans, because that was a huge thing that people loved in the original EQ. And then they had to add it into EQ 2, which they added with limited, that would be opinionated, but with limited success in comparison to how big it was in EQ 1. Because in EQ 1, they released Beast Lord, I think Berserker during the Planes of Power expansion.
Yeah.
And then EQ 2 rolls along, and it was almost like they stealthed it in. It's like, oh, and by the way, you can play Beast Lord.
Right.
It's like, what? So that's kind of big.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of pet classes in MMOs, but for me, especially with EQ, I've always been a fan of the Necromancer. I don't really enjoy beast pets, you know, a la Beast Lord, of course, or the Hunter from WoW. I've always enjoyed magical pets, just my little preference.
Oh, well, Beast Lords are good too. I mean, you know.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying you've got a kitty cat, good for you. I've got a risen from the grave bit of evilness here. I know which one I would choose.
If you're going to go ahead and drop that $15 on the UK PC Gamer edition issue, you know,
usually
like three times the price of the PC Gamer in America. I haven't figured out why yet, but
yeah, we were talking about this the other night. I think here, I live in Texas, the US version of PC Gamer is like $7-$8, and the UK version is $16, at least here in Texas, and I don't know why.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Oh, well. Well.
All right. Alrighty, let's see here. Jason's added a little, some little tidbits on Black Friday, some upcoming gaming deals. You want to fill us in, Jason?
Oh, yeah. I was going to call this the Black Friday episode, man. Are you kidding? Come on now. All right. So, I'm sure by now everybody knows that in 2 days you're going to be spending midnight, some freezing out in the cold or wet, because you love someone else or because you're trying not to admit that you're spending a lot of money on yourself. So we wanted to help you out here, all you gamers. Here's a couple out here that you can get online, and if you can sneak it by your wife, good luck. PS3 and Xbox 360 have BioShock Infinite for $20 on Amazon right now. And I'm sure Gray will tell you that BioShock Infinite is entirely worth the money.
$20. Indeed.
So we've also got PS3 and Xbox 360 GTA 5. That's Grand Theft Auto 5. So at this point, $34, down from $59, which is a really good buy there. Also, if you want to go ahead and top the charts, 3DS Pokemon X, which is which I guess if you're Japanese, I can't believe you don't already have, is $35 US on Amazon. Again, Amazon's just the place to go for those first three. However, you can get the GTA 5 at Best Buy for $34 too, so they're price matching. It's possible they'll price match with BioShock Infinite and Pokemon X, but you're going to have to find out locally on that one. And finally, one of your off-brand iOS here, and I'm hoping to, I actually put this in just for Gray, hoping he'd smile. iOS has Shadowrun Returns for $7.
There you go.
So there you go. I mean, you know, there's four really good deals right there. That'll save you, from what I've calculated, that will save you $80. Not just, you know, spending, but saving $80 buying those four titles. And Merry Christmas and have a good new year on that one.
Another little bit of gaming news. And a lot of people don't like these games. I do. I'm a fan. Lego The Hobbit has been confirmed for a 2014 release. They have not given a date yet, but they said definitely in 2014 it will come out for the Xbox One, 360, 3DS, the Vita, the Wii U, and the PS3 and 4. I suggest that you honestly try one of these out. They're really fun. Honestly, I wasn't a huge fan of the Indiana Jones, Lego Indiana Jones, but the Lego Star Wars was incredible. And I even would say the Lego Star Wars episodes 1, 2, and 3, those were pretty fun. Those were pretty fun as well.
They even had hidden levels. I did those with my son. I bought them for his Wii, and there's some hidden levels, which are even more fun.
I also played the Lego Lord of the Rings. That was great. That was fun. And what's nice now in the Lego games, like the Star Wars, when you would jump in, they had the actors from the Clone Wars cartoons doing the voices. So, of course, you had all the sound effects. You had the music, but Lego games had no dialogue, so you would just, that's all the dialogue was. Well, then along comes the Lord of the Rings, the Lego Lord of the Rings, and they start implementing movie dialogue into the game.
What?
Yep. So I'm quite sure that they will do the same thing for Lego The Hobbit, which will be, oh, good grief, nerd fail. The actual title of the first movie.
The Journey. Double nerd fail. What is up with that?
Anyways, the first Hobbit movie and also the Desolation of Smaug?
Smaug, yeah.
Darn Brits. That Lego The Hobbit game will incorporate the first two movies. So, there we go.
That is awesome. I was joking about the voice acting, and I was, I'm over here typing away. Who's doing the voice acting? I had no idea they actually did voice acting.
Yeah, well, like I said, they actually bring in... Well, they don't... I don't think they read the lines for the game. They just incorporate the audio from the movie.
Wow.
Yep.
That's clutch powers. He ruined it for everybody, but that's okay.
Alrighty, let's move on to the Xbox One, which is apparently having some problems. You want to take this one, Jason?
Oh, you know me. I'm the harbinger of doom when it comes to technology. after last week, y'all could figure that I wouldn't be easy on anybody after hammering my favorite system as hard as we did. But Xbox error codes this week, guys. You're not going to believe this one. Yes, some Xboxes went out that did not work. Imagine that. One of my things that I was telling Gray, one of my rituals on the way home from the work is to stop by the GameStop or the local stores and talk to some of the people, see what's going on. They're actually having a pretty big problem with some of the Xbox controllers. Apparently, quality control isn't what it should be, and there's been multiple instances of people having controllers that did not have the brass prongs to touch the batteries that are inside the controller. So these people are flipping over the controllers, opening up to put the batteries in, and then there's no prongs for the batteries to touch. So that's kind of funny. But what really got me here, again, I don't have numbers on that yet because they haven't released it. And I did know that Gray was talking earlier about some issues with the hard drive now, the dead drive of Doom. Here's some interesting stuff here. There's screenshots over on Kotaku, and I went ahead and put the link in the show notes so that it'll be there for everybody who wants to look it up. But there's actually some really interesting error codes that are popping up on screens now. Here's just a few of them. Something went terribly wrong. And then it's followed by whatever game you were playing. Next is, for some reason, and enter the game name, Killer Instinct is not working. So, that was pretty good. But my favorite of all time was this guy went into a big long explanation. I'll cut it down. Basically, whatever game he was playing required the Kinect and the voice Skyping of the Xbox One. And apparently he used the wrong words when he was in the room and got reported, so they pulled the Skype portion. Well, unfortunately, when you pull the Skype portion of one of these games, you're no longer allowed to play the game. So he got choose something else to play.
Yeah.
And I was like, so you paid $500 for a machine to tell you what you can and can't play.
That's funny.
That is just wrong. But go ahead on over to Kotaku and check out some of these error messages people are sending in because they're just getting better and better.
Just real quick, also a shout out to Rowan in our chat room. He corrected our double nerd fail, of course, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. Thanks, Rowan. Recovery.
Awesome, Rowan. Appreciate it.
Let's see here. Next little bit of news we want to talk about is the Valve Steam Box. I think that's what people are kind of calling it.
Oh, yeah. That's some good stuff. You mind if I blow something up about that?
Go ahead.
Valve, as we all know, has been working tirelessly to corner the market against the evil tyrants of Xbox and PS, Sony PS. So what they decided to do was, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and release a open source box. Even better, what we're going to do is we're going to say what specs it has to meet. And then you guys go and produce to get up to this spec, and we'll go ahead and you can download Steam onto these boxes. Play them on a big screen TV because it hooks directly via HDMI. So as long as you're producing 1080p and so many frame rates, we will let you carry the Steam Box name, Steam Machine. The Steam Machines here, the first one that's really, really awesome is produced by a company called iBuyPower, which is known for their really, really awesome game machines. And they've got a prototype right now that you can view over at GameSpot.com. Again, I'll leave the link on the show notes so that you can see it. But it will run all Steam games at 1080p, 60 frames per second on a 1080p television set. That is fairly powerful computing in an open source box. Now, what we're looking at here, the Valve specs released, was a NVIDIA Titan. The GTX 780, the GTX 760, and the GTX 660. Now, that's the thing, is multiple machines will have one of those four types of video cards. Also, you'll have the flavors of the i7 CPU, the i5 CPU, and the i3, believe it or not. So you're going to be running into multiple flavors of these boxes, from 16 gig DDR3 1600 all the way down to 3 gig DDR. So it's going to be one of those things where you got to kind of watch what you're getting, because you're going to see a huge price range. You're going to have 1 terabyte drives, all, you know, 8 gigabyte hybrid SSHD so that they boot quickly. And your power supply is generally going to be about 450 watts to power the video card internally and, you know, the motherboard. But since it's a dedicated system, it should be less power consumptive. So 80 plus gold ratings. So you use less electricity, which is good. And 35 gigabyte hard drive space. So as long as it meets those minimum specs, and I know that's a wide range, then it can carry the Steam Machine name. And it's really interesting because, like I said, they're going to be producing their own, but they're also outsourcing it. And we all know that that's what made Steam so big. What do you think about that?
I think it's cool. Now, here's the thing. I love Valve, and I haven't talked about it all that much on the show, but I'm such a huge fan of Team Fortress 2. You know, I love Steam. I love Valve's games. I have some questions about the Steam Box. Just right off the bat, the stat you read, it lists two different hard drives. And is that because the OS will be on the 35 gig? I mean, I don't understand why it lists a 1 terabyte and a 35 gig hard drive.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly correct. Like, my current laptop that I use now has two drives in it, an SSD hard drive and then a data drive. The SSD contains nothing but the operating system.
Okay.
And then everything else, the data that's constantly pulled, comes off of the other hard drive for massive amounts, but it's not being hit nearly as hard as the OS is, which is what makes it so fast.
I gotcha. So then my next question is, you know, Steam pushes the Steam Box as your living room gaming machine, but they've also said it connects or is tied to your, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, your office PC, where you might download most of your Steam content. So I'm sure, I guess, through both devices, of course, being logged into Steam, you can transfer, or essentially like a log me in remote access from the Steam Box to your PC to get your games that way. If that's the case, I understand it, but if that's not the case, how are you going to play your games from your office PC to the Steam Box? Because I'm assuming in the Steam Box in the living room, you'll have your mouse and keyboard there. Do you know? Because I haven't seen that.
Just to let you know, one of the big things...
School me.
And this is, no. I'm just throwing this out here. Have you been keeping up with the NVIDIA Shield thing, I think, that we talked about earlier?
Not all that much. Definitely not as much as you.
The NVIDIA Shield works on the propensity that, first of all, it's a Linux-based machine, looks like a game controller, but it can stream directly off of the PC that it's attached to. Think of it like only using the chunks of data that it has to have. It's more like the SSD drive. It goes and gets just the data it needs to currently run what you're currently doing, and then when you transition from point A to point B, instance to instance, then it loads that data. So as long as you're within X amount of distance from a working, let's just call it an NVIDIA base station that is capable of streaming, you utilize those resources between the two pieces. Does that sort of make sense about the architecture of how they're pointing towards it?
Yeah.
So I believe that's what we're really looking at here, is we're looking at distributed gaming.
And as you said, they're outsourcing these. Are they allowing anyone, any hardware manufacturer, to make the Steam Box? Or do they, I'm assuming they have to have Valve approval beforehand? Or
I'm under the impression that what we're looking at is you have to carry the game, the Steam seal of approval, before it's going to accept the Steam keys and download the Steam games and do the sharing. But that being said, I've already seen three separate prototypes. The iBuyPower, the one produced, I believe we talked about it in episode 2, produced by S3, and mm-hmm. then the actual Valve one itself. So
okay. I think this is really cool. I think this is really neat. I mean, I have a pretty good gaming machine. It's definitely not top of the line, but it's pretty good. I don't know that a Steam Box really is for someone like me. I don't know if they're trying to maybe discover a niche market. Just people who... 'cause what I'm seeing is essentially the Steam Box will only pretty much run and play Steam games. And there are a lot. I mean, practically everything out on the market is on Steam. I guess that's maybe a low-end... Yeah, you have to get it from us, but you can then play it gaming PC for maybe the budget-minded gamer. Is that a fair assessment?
Normally, I would say yes, but I don't know how far they're willing to reach. And let me just throw this out here. The Shield is recently, as of 2 days ago, being sold at GameStop, the NVIDIA Shield.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, you're familiar with the PC requirements to play Batman Arkham Origins, right?
Yeah.
That plays on a Shield.
Mm-hmm.
So, that being said, let's not say the budget-minded gamer per se. If you can distribute that computing power between two points, and at least one of those two points has the horsepower it takes to drive one of those games, and it's possible under their architecture, as far as I can tell at this point, because it has not been released other than the specs that we're going to post here on the show notes, how they're running that architecture. So what you could be doing is basically getting two computers running the same single game with distributed horsepower, meaning basically Arkham Origins only needs half of the specs that are required to run it, as long as you have a screen to show it on and something to transmit to.
Right. Okay. Cool stuff. Some good round table here on the Pulse. Jason, we've got another little bit of Valve news. You want to lead us in on this one?
Oh, the Valve launching crowdsourced reviews for Steam?
Yep.
That is so interesting. Another thing Steam has decided to do, because they've had a lot of good stuff with their green lights, and their green lights have turned into some really incredible games. Faster Than Light, Don't Starve. Really, really good games that everybody's liking a lot. I think Limbo actually was one of their green lights too.
Mm-hmm, right.
So there's three huge names that we already know of. Well, they've said, okay, well, not only should it just be for us to decide, we want you guys to help out. So today, believe it or not, as of today, the beta began. You can actually log into http://store.steampower.com/reviews. And again, we'll post this note in the links. But basically, you log in, you write a review, you read a review, you rate other people's reviews, and they're going to crowdsource their own content. Now, people are like, well, that doesn't sound real interesting. It means a lot whenever you're doing that and the devs are reading it. It's not a dev post. It's not for trolling. And a lot of people are going to be like, oh, it's just trolling. What you're going to be doing is reviewing games to affect Metacritic. And we all know how important Metacritic is for sales and pushing indie games into the spotlight. So take it seriously. That's just me saying this because community sources only work as good as the people who are involved and how much you're willing to put into it. So, but one of the beautiful things about this is that it's going to break down the language barrier because it's going to be multilingual. If you write it up in Japanese, I'll be able to translate it in English and get your honest opinion on something that may not even be available on my side of the pond yet. Or if it is, I'll actually see how you feel about it. So that's just really incredible stuff. And from what I'm hearing, the devs are going to be reading and commenting.
It will be nice to see this because, now I haven't really, I use Steam a lot, but I haven't gone into the community side of it all that often with the forums and whatnot. Most of the times when you go to a game, you just see a thumbs up, you know, on the right side of it as
exactly
to, as to what someone rates it. So this will be nice. Let's see here. Before we move on to geeky stuff, I'm going to throw in a little curveball here. If you are listening to this on Stitcher or iTunes, well, Thanksgiving has come and gone, but harkening back to my childhood, a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving is, I believe, reduced in price, $5.99 on the iTunes store. This is an app for iPhone and iPad. It has a read-along book, and it has the episode with director's cut and two additional scenes. Now, I can hear the groaning of the trolls already, but, you know, these are old cartoons, and the season is coming up, and if we're talking about Black Friday, I want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. Not my most favorite holiday, but, you know, Charlie Brown is great. So there's a little delve into the deep nerd that is great all.
That is awesome stuff. It's not Thanksgiving without Snoopy dancing, right?
That's right. Alrighty, moving on to geeky stuff where we talk about tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games. You want to tell us about the little thing you posted, Jason? Then when you're done, I'll tell you what I came up with.
This is something that I knew was out there, but I hadn't done it in a long time. And you know how things just kind of germinate in the dark. You know, it starts off as a small pile of something, and then eventually it becomes a mushroom, and later it's got you on a peyote trip. Well, here we go. Dungeons and Dragons, what character would I be? Basically, everyone's taken one of those personality tests, and I'm sure if you haven't, you might have gone to a job where they want to know what kind of a person you are. So there's like about a billion questions. half of them asking the same thing, right?
Right.
So this one is 123 questions long, and they are all over the place. They're all over the place. I mean, they ask some questions two or three times different ways, but be honest, take it, because at the end, it rolls you up a character, a Dungeons and Dragons character, and you can have different ones rolled up for you, but for different editions. But you can go ahead and find out what you would be had you actually lived in these times and had the same values that you had now. It's interesting. I ended up being, because I know someone's going to say, well, what kind of a jerk is this guy? I ended up being a level 6 neutral good ranger. So it's something that's interesting. You know, you might be sitting around the tabletop with your group and giggling and joking about it. Takes about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes to take it. Go ahead and pop it in there. And then whenever you're done, it'll pop up a JavaScript HTML page to give you all your answers. And believe it or not, it gives you a web link if you want to post the web link to your website. And hey, look what I am. But it's interesting, and it's a lot of fun to play around with, so there you go.
Alrighty, I took the test, took the quiz, whatever. I came up as a level 5 true neutral human bard.
Yes!
Right. And yeah, that's kind of funny. It actually asks, at the beginning of it, did it ask? I don't remember. If it asked what setting you like, whether 3rd edition or whatever, I don't remember.
Yeah, they had that listed at the top, but I don't know if that was an actual question. But over on the left-hand side, you can choose, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it did. But anyways, that's where that came into play. Now, some of you might be going, hey, Greydoll, why are you a bard? Is it because you chose the options that say, yeah, I'd rather read a book than go outside, or I like to research, or I like to learn? That could be part of it. Probably why it gave me a bard was because I had to choose the option that said, in high school, was I a jock? No. Was I a nerd? No. I was a band geek.
Oh, see? Same here.
That's funny. Yeah, so I guess they're like, ah, bard, you're a bard.
Do you remember the question about if your community was dying of some disease, would you?
Right.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm Brad Pitt. I'll go out and save everybody, whatever.
Yeah, that's what I put, too. I would go out and try and find a cure. I didn't say I would heal everyone, but I said I would go out and try to find the cure.
There you go.
Exactly.
So
World War Z.
It's totally good stuff, like I said, and it's funny. Some of the questions are actually kind of funny. Some of them are serious. Like I said, answer them honestly just to get a grasp on what someone else thinks you would be. It's pretty cool.
Indeed. Well, that's going to just about wrap up our show, as we always do. We will finish off with a way to get in touch with us. Well, actually, you know what? Blacklace does our intros and outros. I'll let her handle that. But you can find me on Steam at Teletech, T-E-L-E, Tech, 77062. And you can actually find me on the PlayStation network or friend list, whatever, as the same thing, Teletech, 77062. You want to promote yourself, Jason?
I could. I ended up changing my name because I was with my old group and they were picking on me about my name. So I think I'll go ahead and do that next week. So
okay, no worries. Yeah, that was kind of an on the spot, not in the show notes thing there.
But yeah, we have a good time. But yeah, I do play Steam. Promise next week I'll go ahead and rearrange my handle where everybody can get a hold of me, not just my friends who play a little darker side of the net. So
yeah. All right, good stuff, good stuff. Okay, let's see here. You can check out some of our sister podcasts dealing with games here on holosuitemedia.com. Be sure to check out Beyond the Veil. That is a The Secret World game podcast. You can check out A Worthy Opponent, a podcast by Blacklace, our intro and outro voice announcer, dealing with World of Warcraft Hearthstone, currently in beta. You can also check out Tribbles in Ecstasy, a podcast dealing primarily with Star Trek Online, but also really delving deep into some Star Trek matters. I believe they have just finished up a run on engineers, some of the more well-known engineers in the Star Trek universe. And I believe that will just about wrap up our show. Anything else before we go, Jason?
That was just to everybody. I hope you have a good Thanksgiving for those of you who are celebrating. If not, then I hope you have a good Black Friday. Don't forget our deals that we threw out there. And please come online and play with us. We love to have company whenever we're doing anything in our guild. So check us out.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, and have a good day.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at the Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.